Chapter 44. Hedgerd went home. The morning having now fully broke, he lit his fire, and sat abstractedly beside it. He had not sat there long, when a gentle footstep approached the house, and entered the passage, a finger tapping lightly at the door. Hedgerd's face brightened, for he knew the motions to be Elizabeth's. She came into his room, looking wan and sad. "Have you heard?" she asked. "Mrs. Farfrae. She is dead." "Yes, indeed, about an hour ago." "I know it," said Hedgerd. "Have but lately come in from there. It is so very good of thee, Elizabeth, to come and tell me. You must be so tired out too, with sitting up. Now do you bide here with me this morning. You can go, and rest in the other room, and I will call thee when breakfast is ready." To please him, and herself for his recent kindliness was winning a surprised gratitude from the lonely girl, she did as he bade her, and lay down on a sort of couch which Hedgerd had rigged up out of a settle in the adjoining room. She could hear him moving about in his preparations, but her mind ran most strongly on Lucetta, whose death in such fullness of life, and amid such cheerful hopes of maternity, was appallingly unexpected. Presently she fell asleep. Meanwhile her stepfather in the outer room had set the breakfast in readiness, but finding that she dozed he would not call her. He waited on, looking into the fire and keeping the kettle boiling with housewifely care, as if it were an honor to have her in his house. In truth, a great change had come over him with regard to her, and he was developing the dream of a future lit by her filial presence, as though that way alone could happiness lie. He was disturbed by another knock at the door, and rose to open it, rather deprecating a call from anybody just then. A stoutly built man stood on the doorstep, with an alien, unfamiliar air about his figure and bearing an air which might have been called colonial by people of cosmopolitan experience. It was the man who had asked the way at Peter's Finger. Hedgerd nodded, and looked inquiry. "Good morning, good morning," said the stranger with profuse heartiness. "Is it Mr. Hedgerd I am talking to?" "My name is Hedgerd." "Then I've caught 'ee at home, that's right. Morning's the time for business," says one. "Can I have a few words with you?" "By all means," Hedgerd answered, showing the way in. "You may remember me?" said his visitor, seating himself. Hedgerd observed him indifferently, and shook his head. "Well, perhaps you may not. My name is Newson." Hedgerd's face and eye seemed to die. The other did not notice it. "Know the name well," Hedgerd said at last, looking on the floor. "I make no doubt of that. Well, the fact is, I've been looking for ye this fortnight past. I landed at Havenpool, and went through Casterbridge on my way to Falmouth, and when I got there, they told me you had some years before been living at Casterbridge. Back came I again, and by long, and by late I got here by coach, 10 minutes ago. He lives down by the mill, apostrophe says they. So here I am. Now that transaction between us some 20 years agone is that I've called about. 'Twas a curious business. I was younger then than I am now, and perhaps the less said about it, in one sense, the better. Curious business. 'Twas worse than curious. I cannot even allow that I'm the man you met then. I was not in my senses, and a man's senses are himself. We were young and thoughtless," said Newson. "However, I've come to mend matters, rather than open arguments. Poor Susan, hers was a strange experience. She was a warm-hearted, homespun woman. She was not what they call shrewd, or sharp at all, better as he had been. She was not. As you in all likelihood know, she was simple-minded enough to think that the sale was in a way binding. She was as guiltless of wrongdoing in that particular as a saint in the clouds. I know it, I know it. I found it out directly," said Hedgerd, still with averted eyes. "Here lay the sting out to me. If as he had seen it as what it was, she would never have left me. Never. But how should she be expected to know? What advantages had she? None. She could write her own name, and no more. Well, it was not in my heart to undeceive her when the deed was done, said the sailor of former days. Thought, and there was not much vanity in thinking it, that she would be happier with me. She was fairly happy, and I never would have undeceived her till the day of her death. Your child died, as he had another, and all went well. But a time came, mind me, a time always does come. A time came, it was some while, after she and I and the child returned from America, when somebody as he had confided her history to, told her my claim to her was a mockery, and made a jest of her belief in my right. After that she was never happy with me. She pined, and sucked and sighed. She said she must leave me, and then came the question of our child. Then a man advised me how to act, and I did it, for I thought it was best. I left her at Falmouth, and went off to sea. When I got to the other side of the Atlantic there was a storm, and it was supposed that a lot of us, including myself, had been washed overboard. I got ashore at Newfoundland, and then I asked myself what I should do. Since I'm here, here I'll bide, I thought to myself. 'Twill be most kindness to her, now she's taken against me, to let her believe me lost, for, I thought, while she supposes us both alive she'll be miserable, but if she thinks me dead she'll go back to him, and the child will have a home. I've never returned to this country till a month ago, and I found that, as I supposed, she went to you, and my daughter with her. They told me in Falmouth, that Susan was dead. But my Elizabeth Jane, where is she? Dead likewise, said Henshire doggedly. Surely you learned that too? The sailor started up, and took an enervated pace or two down the room. Ede, he said, in a low voice. Hen, what's the use of my money to me? Henshire, without answering, shook his head, as if that were rather a question for Newson himself than for him. Where is she buried? The traveler inquired. Beside her mother, said Henshire, in the same stolid tones. When did she die? A year ago and more, replied the other without hesitation. The sailor continued standing. Henshire never looked up from the floor. At last Newson said, Colin, my journey hither has been for nothing. I may as well go as I came. It has served me right. I'll trouble you no longer. Henshire heard the retreating footsteps of Newson upon the sanded floor, the mechanical lifting of the latch, the slow opening and closing of the door, that was natural to a bulked or dejected man, but he did not turn his head. Newson's shadow passed the window. He was gone. Then Henshire, scarcely believing the evidence of his senses, rose from his seat amazed at what he had done. It had been the impulse of a moment. The regard he had lately acquired for Elizabeth, the new-sprung hope of his loneliness, that she would be to him a daughter, of whom he could feel as proud as of the actual daughter she still believed herself to be, had been stimulated by the unexpected coming of Newson to a greedy exclusiveness in relation to her, so that the sudden prospect of her loss had caused him to speak mad lies like a child, in pure mockery of consequences. He had expected questions, to close in round him, and unmask his fabrication in 5 minutes, yet such questioning had not come. But surely they would come. Newson's departure could be but momentary. He would learn all by inquiries in the town, and return to curse him, and carry his last treasure away. He hastily put on his hat, and went out in the direction that Newson had taken. Newson's back was soon visible up the road, crossing Bull Stake. Henshire followed, and saw his visitor stop at the King's Arms, where the morning coach which had brought him waited half an hour for another coach which crossed there. The coach Newson had come by was now about to move again. Newson mounted, his luggage was put in, and in a few minutes the vehicle disappeared with him. He had not so much as turned his head. It was an act of simple faith in Henshire's words, faith so simple as to be almost sublime. The young sailor who had taken Susan Henshire on the spur of the moment, and on the faith of a glance at her face, more than 20 years before, was still living and acting under the form of the grizzled traveler who had taken Henshire's words on trust so absolute as to shame him as he stood. Was Elizabeth Jane to remain his by virtue of this hardy invention of a moment? Perhaps not for long, said he. Newson might converse with his fellow travelers, some of whom might be Casterbridge people, and the trick would be discovered. This probability threw Hensher into a defensive attitude, and instead of considering how best to right the wrong, and acquaint Elizabeth's father with the truth at once, he bethought himself of ways to keep the position he had accidentally won. Towards the young woman herself his affection grew more jealously strong with each new hazard to which his claim to her was exposed. He watched the distant highway expecting to see Newson return on foot, enlightened and indignant, to claim his child. But no figure appeared. Possibly he had spoken to nobody on the coach, but buried his grief in his own heart. His grief. What was it, after all, to that which he, Henchard, would feel at the loss of her? Newson's affection, cooled by years, could not equal his who had been constantly in her presence. And thus his jealous soul speciously argued to excuse the separation of father and child. He returned to the house half expecting that she would have vanished. No, there she was just coming out from the inner room, the marks of sleep upon her eyelids, and exhibiting a generally refreshed air. Oh, father, she said smiling. Had no sooner lain down than I napped, though I did not mean to. I wonder I did not dream about poor Mrs. Farfrae, after thinking of her so, but I did not. How strange it is that we do not often dream of latest events, absorbing as they may be. I am glad you have been able to sleep, he said, taking her hand with anxious proprietorship, an act which gave her a pleasant surprise. They sat down to breakfast, and Elizabeth Jane's thoughts reverted to Lucetta. Their sadness added charm to a countenance whose beauty had ever lain in its meditative soberness. Father, she said, as soon as she recalled herself to the outspread meal, it is so kind of you to get this nice breakfast with your own hands, and I idly asleep the while. I do it every day, he replied. Who have left me? Everybody has left me. How should I live, but by my own hands? You are very lonely, are you not? Eh, child, to a degree that you know nothing of. It is my own fault. You are the only one who has been near me for weeks. And you will come no more. Why do you say that? Indeed I will, if you would like to see me. Henchard signified dubiousness. Though he had so lately hoped that Elizabeth Jane might again live in his house as daughter, he would not ask her to do so now. Newson might return at any moment, and what Elizabeth would think of him for his deception it were best to bear apart from her. When they had breakfasted, his stepdaughter still lingered, till the moment arrived at which Henchard was accustomed to go to his daily work. Then she arose, and with assurance of coming again soon went up the hill in the morning sunlight. At this moment her heart is as warm towards me as mine is towards her. She would live with me here in this humble cottage for the asking. Yet before the evening probably he will have come, and then she will scorn me. This reflection, constantly repeated by Henchard to himself, accompanied him everywhere through the day. His mood was no longer that of the rebellious, ironical, reckless misadventurer, but the leaden gloom of one who has lost all that can make life interesting, or even tolerable. There would remain nobody for him to be proud of, nobody to fortify him, for Elizabeth Jane would soon be but as a stranger, and worse. Susan, Farfrae, Lucetta, Elizabeth all had gone from him, one after one, either by his fault, or by his misfortune. In place of them, he had no interest, hobby, or desire. If he could have summoned music to his aid, his existence might even now have been born, for with Henchard music was of regal power. The merest trumpet or organ tone was enough to move him, and high harmonies transubstantiated him. But hard fate had ordained that he should be unable to call up this divine spirit in his need. The whole land ahead of him was as darkness itself. There was nothing to come, nothing to wait for. Yet in the natural course of life he might possibly have to linger on earth another 30 or 40 years, scoffed at best pitied. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.